many of the Ishbitzers that I've taught and studied are very penetrating, psychologically astute, great reveals of human identity, religious struggle, as seen through the lenses of Kabbalah, as seen through the lenses of imagery, metaphors, and icons, which are very new and creative, that aren't just borrowing the icons of Chazal. The one I'm discussing today is more of a survey. None of the parts here are that revolutionary, but the model is a very fascinating one. The end of Parsha Shlach has six sections of halachic detail, and they don't seem to have much in concert. They don't seem to have much in common. Their placement in the end of Shlach is somewhat not of a non sequitur. Some of them have already been stated. Some of them will be stated. The Shlach is more of a narrative. It's not a legal section. It's clear that there's some deeper message to the insertion of these six halachic sections. The sections being the Nesachim, the wine, the flour and the oil, which accompanies Korbanos, section number one. Section number two, the Mekoshesh, the person who was punished. And I'm not listing them in the order that they appear in the Torah. I'm just listing them in the order that the Ishbitz will collect them based on some other catalog and some other index. The Mekoshesh and Shabbos. Parsha Tzitzis, Parsha Schala, and the Korbanos for a person or a community that violates Avodah Zarah. It's really only five sections. There are five sections of halachic detail that are either repeated elsewhere or should be repeated elsewhere, and certainly their placement in Parsha Shlach is at the very, very least redundant, and maybe even if not redundant, it seems to be completely unrelated to the setting. So they're obviously providing some larger message, and this is an important setting for providing those larger messages, because there was a great failure and a great deterioration after the Meraglim, and there's a need for reinforcing. The Ishbitz doesn't say this, but I'm elaborating to reinforce some important religious tenets. They're about to start a 40-year trek or 38-year trek through the desert, so they need to have certain ideas reinforced. This is a very, very delicate, vulnerable, and strategically important seam or juncture in the desert journey. And it's only obvious that it's only expected that there should be some reinforcement. And the reinforcement doesn't seem to be about theologically fundamental mitzvahs such as Avodah Zarah and Avas Hashem and Torah, although Avodah Zarah makes the cut. But it seems to have other mitzvahs that would appear to be secondary mitzvahs or not as central mitzvahs, but they have to carry some symbolic meaning. Now, in order to tease out the symbolic meaning, the Ishbitz had to find another list, and that list had to be more overtly religious, and that list had to detail, had to list off, had to check off five, possibly six religious values. And that list could serve as the gloss, as the overlay. Imagine you're putting a little transparent overlay to help us better understand this list. So the Ishbitz found it, and that's really the genius of this piece, is that he creates a correspondence between the list of five, he really makes it into a list of six in the end of Shlach, and those five or six in the end of Shlach don't seem to carry religious fundamental values, but he finds another list of six which does, and if you just associate the two and cross-link, then you can decipher and decode what each of these halachic sections is meant to convey about religion, not just about the halachas per se. What did he find? He found a list in Tehillim Perek Yutes. Tehillim Perek Yutes begins with a glorious description of nature and how nature reveals the beauty of Hashem, the magnificence of Hashem. And then it shifts in midstream to Talmud Torah and to Yerushalayim and to Mitzvos. And there are six psukim, six values, six elements of Avodas Hashem. Number one, Torah Hashem Temima Meshivas Nafesh. Number two, Eidos Hashem Nemana Machimas Pesi. Number three, Pekudei Hashem Yishar Misam Chalev. Number four, Mitzvot Hashem Bara Miras Enayim. Number five, Yiras Hashem Torah Medes Lad. Number six, Mishpatei Hashem Emes Sekhi Yachdav. So there really are six descriptions that seem to be very religious, very theological. The rest of the parak, Nechavad Mizav and Pazrav, they're beautiful, they're enjoyable. Psukim Nevash, they're sweeter than honey. But these six psukim carry a very religious, theological, how do we view religion, how should we view HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah, how should we view Hashem's Ratzon, Yir HaShemayim. For the Ishbitz, these six correspond to the five sections in the end of Shlach plus one. He inserts Yehoshua and a and a description of Yehoshua's secret sauce, of Yehoshua's exceptionalism, in order to round out the list to six. So that seems to be a little bit, I wouldn't say artificial, a little bit strained, because Yehoshua doesn't really carry any halachic data or any halachic message in the end of Shlach, but the Ishmael wants to create six, so he finds that sixth component in Shlach to be Yehoshua. That's really the brilliance of the Ishbitz, to be able to cross-link. There's a lot of cross-linking between metaphors, between midrashim. If a certain object has a certain metaphoric association in one area, that metaphor should carry throughout the entire Torah. And it's almost independent of Chazal. Chazal have their own system of metaphors and of associations, but the Ishbitz creates his own. And he creates his own, not just one-on-one, but in this case, 616. A list of six in Tehillim Perek Yutes, and a list of five or six in the end of Shlach. So that's really the core of the Shir, the core of this piece. I'll just list off the six religious traits and how the mitzvot reflect them or symbolize them. As I said before, I don't feel that there's one that's very controversial. I won't get into that. I'll just describe it. And the other five are pretty straightforward. The first is, of course, the Nesachim. Again, when I say first, I don't mean the order by which they appear in Parshas Shlach, but the order by which they appear in Tehillim Yutes. The first pasuk is Taras Hashem Temimo Meshivas Nafesh. There's some restoration of soul, Meshivas Nafesh. And the Nesachim were restorative. Am Yisrael lost its spirit, lost its identity, lost its horizons of hope. They're now facing 38 years in the desert, and they need to have their spirit replenished, and their spirit is replenished by the message that they'll enter Eretz Yisrael, that they'll offer korbanos one day. It may be delayed, but it is inevitable. Those korbanos will be associated by oil, and particularly by wine, something which only Jews offer, because there's a special relationship with the Kodesh Baruch Hu and the Jewish people, and that should create simcha, and it's a bilateral simcha, and here's where it gets a little controversial. And the Meraglim really didn't sin intrinsically, but they may even have sense that a Kodesh Baruch Hu wanted to delay the entry, and that's where it gets very, very controversial, that the message wasn't just that even though you sinned, I'm still here for you, and one day you'll still enter the land, and one day you'll still bring korbanos, but it's almost as if the sin wasn't the sin, and that's what made them happy. But that's the controversial component. Without the controversy, it was just a symbol of love and of joy and of hope and of optimism and of korbanos and of wine. So it's Mishivas Nafesh. The second part of that section or that list, that sequence in Tehillim Yutes, is Eidos Hashem Ne'emana Machkimas Pesi. HaKadosh Baruch Hu's testimony is Ne'emana, is trustworthy, is reliable, has integrity. This refers to Yehoshua. Yehoshua wasn't easily seduced, and he wasn't easily seduced, okay, here's an important statement in general, because he was simple. And that's an interesting association. Why would you track or trace Yehoshua's inflexibility, his obstinacy, his strength of character, because he was tamim? Now, his being a tamim is evidenced by his being associated with the Ohel, he was willing to accept black and white, even dogmatic ideas from Moshe Rabbeinu, and to sit in his tent rather than over complexifying and sophisticated analysis. And he was a tamim. That was the trait. And that's why he's associated with the Ohel of Moshe Rabbeinu. He's a willing listener. He's a pliant disciple of Moshe. Well, we know that sometimes people are too sophisticated for their own good. Every idea can be analyzed and overanalyzed. Every position can be defended. There's no moral fixed north. Everything can be seen from different angles. So when David HaMelech in Tehillim Perek Yutes describes Eidos Hashem Ne'emana Machkimas Pesi, the words of Hashem are the reliable. There's a moral clarity. They can Machkimas Pesi. They can add wisdom to the Pesi, to the simpleton. So the simpleton, the word Pesi, even the fool, is associated with the word ne'emana. Eidos Hashem ne'emana machkimas pesi. That if you are a pesi, namely you're a tamim, you don't have to be too sophisticated for your own good, then you'll find HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Torah is reliable and dependable and can serve as your backbone to face morally complex and confusing situations, which probably the Meraglim was. You could make a case for joining the Meraglim, you can make a case for defending the Jewish people, you can make a case for seeing the land as inconquerable. But if you are this morally fixed, unmoving, and unbudgeable moral force, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu promised us, and don't let the facts confuse us, and don't let the adversarial conditions intimidate us, you're a pesi, again, the Ishbitz doesn't really stress the word Pesach in this Pesach, but I'm stressing it. He doesn't really tell us which word in the Pesach and Tehillim is crucial, but it's a description of a condition of Yeshua, that he was associated with the Ohel, that he was willing to accept truths in almost a dogmatic fashion, and that allowed him to resist the temptations of the Meraglim. The third Pesach in Tehillim Yutes, Pekudei Hashem Yisharim Misamchei Lev, that the mitzvahs of Hashem are Yisharim, and they're meant to lead to human prosperity and human health. This, he feels, is a gloss or a narrative or a response or a feedback to the Mekoshesh, because Mekoshesh sounds a very strident message about Shabbos. You violate Shabbos, even with something seemingly innocuous. It's certainly not as sinister as lighting a match or building a fire or building a home. This is someone who just collects wood. Now, what exactly the Yisr was it Ma'amer, was it Hotzah, but it's certainly not one of the cardinal Yisurim of Shabbos, which the entire Shabbos was desecrated and violated. It's a light melacha. Tells us in the beginning of Shabbos, refers to Hotzah as a melacha gerua, as a substandard melacha. You're not building, you're not tearing down, you're not sowing, reaping, harvesting. You're transporting items. So the Mekoshesh was violating one of those transporting based melachos, and yet he's dealt with so harshly, and you could feel that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvah of Shabbos is meant to clamp down and suffocate human experience. And of course, we know there's a deeper spiritual reservoir that Shabbos allows us to tap into, and there has to be a complete cessation of work in order to enable that replenishing and enable that redistribution of time and of experience. So that pasuk in Tehillim, Pekudei Hashem Yisharim Misamchei Lev, is meant to offset incorrect or distorted messages about Shabbos that can emerge from Parshas Shlach. That Shabbos, even though it seems to be harsh and uncompromising, it's meant to enable or to accessorize us to deeper levels of Hashem's Pekudei Hashem, which are Yisharim. The fourth pasuk in Tehillim Yutes, Mitzvah Hashem Bara Meiras Einayim, enlightening, vision, sight, Meiras Einayim. The Ishbitz says corresponds to Tzitzis. Tzitzis, in his mind, is always an icon for Yiras Hashem. Why is it an icon for Yiras Hashem? That's hard to know. But possibly because, and I'm inserting something the Rav said, is that the Tchelas blue is meant to remind us of the Tchelas blue color of the sky and the blue color of the ocean. The blue color of the sky is not blue. The sky is colorless. The ocean water isn't blue. It's transparent. Blue is the hue which deep elements reflect when they're impenetrable. If I'm looking, I'm sitting in a room, I'm looking at the white paint on a wall, there's no depth to it. It's just the way the rays are hitting it and the light rays are hitting it, it reflects white color towards me. But when there's something that I can't see through because there's depth and layers to it, so the color it's associated with impenetrability and unknowability and mystery is blue. The sky is blue. The atmosphere is blue. The ocean is blue. Tchelas reminds us of our inability to sense HaKadosh Baruch Hu, or inability fully, as opposed to the clarity of white and the rationalization of religion. This is something the Rav spoke about, and I've spoken about a lot also. You can cross-reference it, I'm sure, in other Shiur. So if Tzitzis is a attempt to condition Yirat Shamayim, according to the Ishbitz, provides, as the Pasuk in Tehillim describes, Me'iras Einayim. If you have Yirat Shamayim, then you have vision. Again, a much longer share, the Ishbitz doesn't elaborate, but what I think he means is that the ability to realize you can't see Hashem, Yirat Shamayim doesn't mean fear and trembling, and punishment. Yirat Shamayim means recognition of the unknowability of Hashem, then you see. If you think you can see Hashem, you don't see Hashem. If you know you can't see Hashem, then you're actually seeing Hashem, because that's the closest you can see, is to know that you can't see Him. And that's a riddle that I've certainly spoken about before. It's a riddle which is latent within the etymology or the etymological association between the word Yira, Yud Resh Aleph Hey, and the word Re'ia, Resh Aleph Yud Hey. So if you possess Yira Shemayim, you have greater Re'ia, you have greater vision. So he really condenses into three lines. There's a lot to speak about. I don't want to go into any one of these six issues. I just want to list the six. Number five is Yiras Hashem Tahara Omedes Lad. Pasuk in Tehillim Yudes, extolling the value of Yiras Hashem. Yiras Hashem, the Ishbitz believes, relates to Chala. Chal is the latter stage dedication of something, of your produce and your success, HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's one thing to be in the field and donate some fruit, some trumos and maisros, some leket and shichacha, some peah. But what happens when you're already at an advanced and you're already at a later stage, you're in the kitchen, you're baking, you're cooking. Now the human realm has taken over from the natural realm. Now human beings are exerting their faculties and their talents. And to be able to recognize Hashem even at that moment and to deliver simchala is a sign of Yiras Hashem, and it is omedes la'ad. It's a suffusive recognition of Hashem rather than a compartmentalized, oh, when I'm in the field, it's clear that my field success, my agricultural success is based on Hashem, but now I'm in the kitchen, now I'm cooking, now I'm the chef, now it's master chef, now, no, hafresh eschala. The final one is mishpatei Hashem emes, that kuyachtav until amyutes, HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mitzvahs are logically integrated, logically consistent, logically systematic, because normally when you bring a par and you bring a par and a sayer, basically there's a lot of discrepancies between the korbanos described in Shlach and the korbanos described elsewhere. So for example, here when you violate a vodazara, you offer a par as an ola and a sayer for a chatas. In Vayikra, it's normally the par as a chatas rather than a sayer lachatas. So if you just looking at the two parshios without recognizing some larger integrating logic, you feel like there's contradiction, there's clash. It's a para and ola, it's a para achatas. But if you're able to sense some reconciling factor, some differentiating factor that maintains logical integrity but still allows for details, discrepant details, so you realize that avodah zarah is one type of mitzvah, one type of avera calls for one type of korban, other achatas call for another type of korban. So you're able to create consistency and continuity and logical integrity, even though the details seem to clash, which is, of course, the entire purpose of the Talmud, to loop together clashing details and to find the inner logic that is similar but dictates the sprouting of seemingly discrepant details. So, again, each of these six requires long and extensive elaboration about what the values are, but the magic of this piece in the Ishbitz in the end of Shlach and Chelek Aleph is the ability to create a parallel list of six in Tehillim Yutes. That list is more transparent. That list has clear religious statements. Mitzvah Hashem Bara, Torah Hashem Tamima, Yiras Hashem Tahara, Pekudei Hashem Risharim. And then to cross-link each of these six sections to the five, or in this case, six sections in Shlach, and thereby help us decode what the symbolic religious meaning or message was of each of these five plus one, five halachic sections, tzitzis, Avodah Zarah, Chala, Nisachim, and what's the fifth one? Just let's see. And the fifth one is, excuse me, Shabbos. Again, it's Shabbos, Nisachim, Tzitzis, Avodah Zarah, and Chala. And you add in Yehoshua and what he symbolizes, straightforward acceptance of truths rather than moral relativism that swirls and distorts truth. Those six sections in Shlach have deeply, profoundly important religious meaning that's conveyed. Their conveyance and those messages are more transparent in the parallel list of six in Tehillim Yutes.